Text, Hallmark Movies and Mysteries Presents. Title, Poisoned in Paradise, a Martha's Vineyard Mystery. At night, lights reflect on a body of water. Inside a restaurant, a server carries a basin of dirty dishes. She turns a corner, then steps into a kitchen. She sets the basin on a counter, then pauses for a breath and straightens her apron. Text, Amuse Entertainment Production. Nearby, a manager works on a laptop. The server approaches to claim her tips.
You did okay tonight, Katie.
Yeah, I've done worse. Claire, could I grab your keys? I should restock the house wine. Better to do it now than before my shift tomorrow.
Sure. I'm heading out.
Okay, thanks.
I'll see you tomorrow.
Katie takes the keys and heads into the kitchen.
Hey, good night.
She passes a man who cleans a grill. Then, she steps into a dim stockroom. With a furtive glance over her shoulder, she unlocks a door. Katie steps into an office. She peers through the door to be sure no one followed her, but does not close the door all the way. At a computer workstation, she clicks on a file named Personal. Then, she plugs a USB thumb drive into the computer. Katie leans toward the computer and types. Numbers whiz by on the screen. A message reads, Copying. Startled, she turns to the door and listens. The file finishes copying. Katie yanks her thumb drive from the computer. She picks up Claire's keys, then creeps toward the door. In the kitchen, a co-worker puts on a jacket. Katie waits until her co-workers are gone, then closes and locks the office door. Alone, she walks through the dim stockroom. In a cubby, she places the keys. Text, Executive Producers, Jesse Metcalf, Michael Pupras. Katie hurries down a staircase. She glances over her shoulder to be sure no one follows her. Then, she puts on her coat and scarf. Wide-eyed, Katie pauses. She turns toward the sound. Then, she hurries through the dim restaurant with her purse and helmet. As someone enters, she flattens herself behind a wall to avoid being seen. Text, written by Jim Adler. Katie pauses, then runs out into the rainy night. She wears a pink helmet as she darts toward her moped. Katie climbs onto the moped, then turns the key in the ignition. She peers over her shoulder with wide, frightened eyes, then rides off into the rain. Text, directed by Mark Jean. Near the restaurant, a person in a dark jacket watches her go. From above, boats in a harbor. In a boat docked in a boat slip, Dr. Zimadiris ties a rope knot. Jeff tugs the knot and smiles.
Nice work.
So, the inaugural voyage of the Remedy is now in the books. Thanks for bearing with me.
It could have been worse.
One of the engines conked out. The rudder jammed and the bilge pump quit on me.
Okay, well, at least we didn't have to row back.
If nothing else, we know she floats, right?
You put so much work into restoring this classic. She looks amazing, and I had a great time.
Glad to hear it. After you.
Z climbs out of the boat. Jeff follows with a fishing rod.
I know getting her back on the water meant a lot to you, so really, thanks for inviting me.
Well, if my dad was looking down, he probably got a good laugh.
But seriously, thanks for coming out with me, Z.
Unfortunately, the fun's over. I've got some errands to run. I've got a shift at the ER.
Have you considered early retirement? I mean, I was skeptical, but I'm starting to find it pretty great.
Yeah, it does seem to suit you.
Time for more important things, like catching my dinner.
I wish I could join you.
Well, there's no reason for you not to enjoy the spoils. Dinner tonight at my place.
Yeah, I'm in. I'll bring the wine.
Perfect.
I'll see you there.
All right, see you there.
They smile. Jeff watches Z as she walks away. Then, Z turns and watches Jeff do the same. She smiles to herself, then continues to walk. At Bob's Coffee, a review on the surfboard reads, Bob's food is the best. A barista serves Jeff at a counter.
Bob's still visiting his sister up in Plymouth?
Yep, should be back next week.
Well, the coffee's still on point. Good work.
Nearby, Katie eyes Jeff as he grabs napkins.
Jeff Jackson?
That's me.
I'm Katie. Leonard. I wait tables over at the beach house, if you know the place.
I do. Haven't been by in a while. For better or worse, I do my own cooking.
He knits his brows.
Speaking of which, better get out on the sound while the bluefin are still biting.
She follows him.
There was an article in the Vineyard Gazette with your name in it. It said that you've been consulting for the police.
Unofficially?
He studies her face.
Right. See, that's why I'm coming to you. I have a problem, and I was kind of hoping that maybe you would consult with me.
What kind of problem?
I got involved in something I shouldn't have. And now I'm in over my head, and I don't know what to do.
Well, if whatever you got caught up in is against the law, then there's a simple answer. Go talk to Chief Medeiros.
What's the complicated answer?
Katie, whatever you got caught up in, you'll be better off getting ahead of it rather than letting trouble catch up to you.
You're right. Okay, thank you for your advice, Mr. Jackson.
As Katie leaves the coffee shop, Jeff wrinkles his forehead in thought. He turns, and they peer at each other through the window. Then, Katie walks away.
Well, dinner ain't gonna catch itself, Mr. Jackson.
Sign, Vineyard Island Bank. Inside the bank, three tellers assist customers. Z uses an ATM. Her receipt shows a balance of $109,547.63.
That can't be right.
Oh! Look out, Doc.
No, I'm so sorry.
Is everything okay?
I guess it could be worse. I have an extra $100,000 in my checking account.
What?
Yeah. Wow. You have any idea how that could happen?
Actually, it's my sister you gotta talk to. She's the new CEO. Dad tried to rope me in the business, but I never had a head for numbers.
I was sorry to hear of his passing.
Thanks, Z. Hey, I was just heading to see Lauren. I'll take you.
All right.
Z follows Noah. They meet with Lauren.
Thank you, Dr. Medeiros, for bringing this to my attention.
Our dad used to give away toasters. If you're gonna be this generous, sis, won't be long before the last family-owned bank on the Vineyard goes out of business.
Helpful, as always, Noah. And for the record, the bank is in great shape.
So, how much do I get to keep?
Sorry, but none. Spending this money would be a felony.
And then your dad would have to arrest you. It could get awkward.
Right. Hazel, could you please look into this for me?
Sure, thank you.
If you'll excuse me, this comedian and I have some family matters to attend to.
Okay.
Easy come, easy go, right, Z?
Hey, what can you do?
Z smiles.
Hey, Hazel, how's your physio going?
Oh, amazing. Only two more weeks to go. Good thing I had such a great doctor after my accident.
Oh, I'm happy you think so.
Oh, I'm certain of it. Okay. Now, it's... It says the money was transferred into your account the day before yesterday.
Okay. Who sent it?
It says a corporate account.
Huh.
We just finished an upgrade to our system, so it could be a glitch or maybe an honest mistake. Someone got the account numbers wrong when they were making the transfer.
Okay. Do I need to do anything?
Nope. I'll just flag it, and it will get sorted in a day or two.
All right. They don't seem too worried about it, and it's their bank, so I guess I shouldn't be either.
Hazel looks over her shoulder.
Truth is, they've got bigger fish to fry.
Oh, like what?
Well, Noah's not happy with her father's will and has been threatening to take Lauren to court.
Oh, was he cut out?
Oh, no, he was taken care of, but it really irked him that Lauren was given control of the bank.
He made it seem like he was never interested.
I think it has more to do with how the two of them were always competing to be their father's favorite.
Hazel. You might have missed your calling as a therapist.
Mm-hmm. But then I'd actually have to deal with people's problems instead of just gossiping about them.
Thank you for your help.
Anytime.
Bye.
Bye.
Outside, a boat sails under a blue sky. On a sidewalk, a woman carries a purse.
Britt!
Hey.
Thanks for meeting me. I want to get something a little extra special at the wine store, so I could use your expertise.
Oh, I see. What's the occasion?
No occasion, per se. Just dinner with Jeff.
Just, she says.
We're having dinner.
Seize the day, Z. For the night. You deserve it. But this advice comes at a price, though, because I need your help with a little something.
Sure. What's up?
Follow me.
At a bakery, a man serves a customer.
Here you go. Tell your husband I say hello.
Then, He smiles at Britt.
Ms. Prajna, thank you for this opportunity to win your business.
Mr. Walsh, meet my friend Z. She'll be helping me decide if your pastries are worthy of my tea room.
A pleasure.
Are you new to the vineyard, Mr. Walsh?
Please, it's Frankie. And yes, I opened Tre Gourmet just a few months back.
Yeah, I passed by. I've been meaning to come in.
The storefront's only the beginning. I'm also looking to supply all the finest establishments in the vineyard because I make only the finest pastries.
Well, my chief taste tester and I are ready to sample the goods.
Right this way. I got eclairs, cannolis, churros, bichons, strudels, torts, you name it, I got it.
Okay.
That is a Queen Amand. It's a classic French pastry.
Wow.
Oh, my gosh.
That is the reaction I was hoping for.
This is amazing. Mm-hmm. Britt, he's got my vote.
There it is, Frankie. I'll be in touch with my first order as soon as I get back to the Vendre.
I'll be right here. And Z, come back anytime.
I will take you up on that.
Z takes another sample.
Nice to meet you.
Likewise.
The women walk.
He's so charming. And these are to die for.
Right? Plus, just feels like a win to support a local business. Now, a wine pairing can make or break a meal. Do you know what Jeff is serving?
Well, I think right now he's standing on a beach with a line in the water, so I'm gonna go with fish.
Jeff loads his fishing gear into his vehicle. A woman pulls up.
Jackie, what a lovely surprise.
Thought I might find you out at your favorite fishing spot.
Yep, here I am.
I'm sorry for the ambush, but I was hoping to interview you for a new piece I'm researching.
Oh, new expose for the Vineyard Gazette.
Actually, it's something else I have in mind. I want to do a piece about you.
Me?
Hear me out. Retired, decorated Boston detective starts a new chapter on Martha's Vineyard, only to find himself embroiled in a series of murder investigations. It's exactly what people on the island, actually everywhere, will want to read.
I don't think so, Jackie.
I want to do a series of
interviews. I think you put enough of the spotlight on me already. In fact, I'd feel a whole lot better if you left my name out of your articles entirely.
I don't think I can.
And I know I can't stop you, but I had to ask. Now, if you don't mind.
He shuts his trunk.
Hey, Jeff, but don't think this is me giving up.
Never.
Jackie drives away from Jeff. At the police station, Chief Medeiros carries paperwork. Jeff enters with a parcel.
Boston Blues are biting today.
The chief catches it.
Didn't you come by to rub my nose in it?
Maybe a little. But since I hit my limit, I thought I'd share in the bounty, bring you a couple fillets.
Oh, I thank you from the bottom of my stomach. Very generous of you to include the delivery.
Well, actually, I was wondering if a young woman named Katie Leonard stopped in to see you today.
Nope.
Any chance she came by while you were out?
No.
Chief places the fish in the fridge.
It's been a quiet day, just how I like it, so I haven't left the station. What's this about?
Can't say, because I don't really know. Now, she said she read about me in the Vineyard Gazette, thought I could help her, but she wouldn't say what the problem was.
I'll keep an eye out for you. And it's no surprise she sought you out. People trust you, JW, myself included. How about a part-time job?
No. Thanks, Chief.
Can't blame you for trying.
I won't hold it against you. Anyway, I gotta get home.
Thanks for the fish.
Don't mention it.
Chief Medeiros smiles as Jeff leaves the station. Outside, Katie walks toward the Martha's Vineyard Police Department. At a distance, she watches Jeff leave the station. Near the sidewalk, Jeff smiles and chats with an officer. Katie looks down at the thumb drive in her hand. Katie's lips press into a thin line. Then, she dials on her phone. As she raises the phone to her ear, Jeff drives away.
We need to talk.
A house with a model sailboat in the window. In a kitchen, Jeff pulls a pan from an oven. He closes the oven and sets the pan on a counter. With a fork in his fingers, Jeff lifts fish from the pan and plates it among vegetables. He carries the plate to a dining table. Then, Jeff opens a fridge.
Just a minute!
He places a bowl on the table, then slides a lighter from his pocket and lights a candle. Jeff smiles, then opens the door for Z. She grins and holds a wine bottle.
Hey!
Hey!
Great timing. Come on in.
As promised.
Nice choice.
Oh.
Pinot Grigio's perfect with fish.
What, you know wines?
A bit. In another life. After my mom got remarried back in Boston, her and her new husband had a lot of dinner parties. I always felt a little out of place, but picked up a few things.
Well, this looks amazing, and it smells even better. You really didn't have to go to all this trouble.
No, no trouble. You know, I just threw a few things together. I hardly spent any time in the kitchen.
Oh, well, you're the detective, but the evidence suggests otherwise.
Guilty as charged. I'll be right back.
Okay. I'll open the wine.
Jeff walks toward a closet. He reaches out, then picks up a shirt. Jeff wrinkles his nose, then tosses the shirt aside. In the kitchen, Z opens the wine bottle. She catches a glimpse of Jeff as he removes his t-shirt.
You found what you need?
I think so.
As Jeff tugs on a new shirt, Z smiles to herself. Jeff adds a flannel over the shirt, then joins Z at the table. She pours wine into a glass for him.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So, what should we drink to?
To new beginnings.
How about old flames?
Later, they hike along the coast.
You know, I hate to admit it, but I don't think I can top a meal like that.
But you're gonna try?
Yeah, maybe a picnic. I do know a charming spot overlooking the ocean.
Can't wait.
They face each other.
I'd be lying if I said that I haven't been thinking about another moment like this between us.
Jeff tucks Z's hair behind her ear.
I'd be lying if I said I hadn't been thinking about kissing you again.
He leans forward. She looks down.
It's just that I feel like I need to tell you something.
Okay.
She looks away. Nearby, Katie's toppled moped.
Z?
Sorry, something's wrong.
Z points.
Come on.
Jeff and Z jog toward the moped. The scooter idles, key still in the ignition. Jeff turns the key.
Well, this moped didn't get here by itself.
Jeff, over here.
Jeff follows C. On the ground, they find a backpack purse.
Oh, no.
Z runs toward an area obscured by brush. Katie sprawls on the ground. Z examines her.
It's Katie.
Who?
I met her earlier today at Bob's. I think I left my phone back at the house. I'll go call for help.
No, Jeff. It's too late.
Z removes her hand from Katie's pulse. Wide-eyed, Z peers up at Jeff. He frowns. At night, Chief Medeiros climbs out of a police car. He shuts the door. Then, he steps under caution tape and walks past an ambulance. Paramedics wheel a gurney. Light snow falls as the chief approaches Jeff and Z.
Z, JW. You found the body.
We did. Her name's Katie Leonard.
That's the woman you were asking about earlier. Was it an accident?
Unlikely, Chief. No skid marks on the road, no damage to the moped.
No skin abrasions, no signs of trauma.
You know, it's like she just laid it down and took off in a hurry. Moped was still running.
That's odd.
Well, based on the cyanotic skin around her lips and eyes, it looks like she had a heart attack.
Heart attack? How old was she?
20-something, and it's unusual, but it's not impossible. Maybe she had an underlying medical condition.
Or something could have caused it. And what if it was chemical?
Mm-hmm.
Any number of drugs can induce a heart attack.
Yeah, that's true, but I can't be sure until I've done an autopsy.
With your permission, Chief.
Go right ahead.
Jeff opens Katie's purse.
No sound of narcotics. Not even prescription meds.
He finds a jar labeled, Katie, Raspberry Mint. Jeff sniffs the liquid inside.
It's not alcohol. Maybe vinegar? We should send this over to the lab.
He places the jar in an evidence bag, then picks up a phone.
Phone's locked.
We'll have Davis take a look down at the station. We're gonna need contact information for next of kin.
Jeff unzips Katie's wallet and examines her ID.
1214 Deerfield Road. She's 26.
That's on the other side of the island. What's she doing all the way over here?
It's possible she came to see me again.
You can't recall anything that might hint at why she came to see you in the first place?
No. Katie says she was in over her head. Asked for my help. I told her to go see you, Chief.
Sadly, she didn't.
And a few hours later, she turned up dead? That's awfully coincidental.
Until we learn different. I think we have to assume foul play.
Agreed. Before you have to ask, Chief? Yeah. I'll help you look into it. I owe her that much.
Appreciate it, JW.
So where do we start?
Well, Katie says she waited tables at the beach house. So let's see if her co-workers can shed any light on what she got herself into.
At the restaurant, Claire stares.
I can't believe it. And here I was angry with her because she was late for her shift.
Did you know Katie well?
Well, I hired her about a year ago. I was her boss, but I considered her a friend.
And when was the last time you saw her?
At the end of her shift last night. Come to think of it, she was the last one here.
Claire, did Katie mention any personal problems she might have been dealing with lately?
Well, she and her ex-boyfriend Glenn had a stormy relationship.
Stormy how?
They seemed to always be at each other's throats, fighting. I figured they were done, but I guess Katie just didn't know how to get out of it. And Glenn isn't the type to just let her go.
Did she confide in you at all?
I saw it firsthand. Glenn was a cook here.
Was, as in past tense?
Yeah. He quit night before last.
Thank you, Claire.
Z and Jeff leave the restaurant. Outside, lights on a gazebo. In a bar, Jeff and Chief Medeiros walk near a counter. They approach a seated man.
Want to eat?
Can I help you? We'd like to ask you a few questions. Why is that? There a problem?
Not unless you make it one. We know you did time for forgery, making fake IDs.
Yeah. And I paid my debt. It's all behind me now.
Really?
Yeah. Really.
Glenn stands up and walks past Jeff and the chief. They follow.
Glenn, we'd rather not have to do this down at the station.
Sure. Whatever.
Have a seat.
Chief Medeiros points to a table. He and Jeff sit down with Glenn.
When did you last see Katie Leonard?
The night before last.
The night you quit your job at the beach house.
Yeah. She dumped me, so I decided to quit my job rather than still have to see her every day. It seemed like a good time for a fresh start all the way around. What's this about?
Katie came to see me. Told me she was in some kind of trouble. I thought you might know something about that.
Whatever she said about me, it's a lie.
What kind of things do you think she'd say?
Who knows? When we first started going out, I thought Katie was the kind of woman that would keep me on the straight and narrow. The truth is, she's just looking out for herself.
How so?
Why don't you ask her?
We can. Katie's dead.
Glenn stares at Jeff, mouth open. Glenn's eyes dart to the chief. Then, he stares at the table.
Whatever happened to her, I had nothing to do with it.
And what makes you think someone had something to do with it?
Well, if her death was an accident, we probably wouldn't be having this little talk.
Glenn, tell us what Katie was involved in.
I don't know.
Jeff stares Glenn down.
Now, if you're not going to charge me with anything, I have better things to do.
Glenn stands up, then leaves the bar. Jeff glares and points at Glenn's back.
That punk knows more than he's telling us.
Well, without any evidence, I can't take him in. Let's call it a night, JW. Pick it up in the morning when we get the autopsy results from Z.
At Royal Fern Hospital, Z smiles at a nurse.
I'll check in 10 minutes. Thanks.
Z walks into a hallway and makes a phone call.
Good morning, Z. You're up early.
I never went to bed, and now I remember why I avoid all-nighters.
I hear that. You find anything interesting from the autopsy yet?
Yes, and fasten your seatbelt because I did not see this one coming.
You figured out what caused Katie's heart attack.
Based on the discoloration of the bile samples and the kidney damage, it's clear she died because of a highly toxic poison.
Poisoning? Well, that would explain her laying down the moped while it was still running.
Mm-hmm.
Z nods.
You know, she was disoriented, wandered off.
Yeah, at which point the toxin caused a seizure that stopped her heart.
So you're ruling this a homicide?
Yes. Given the damage to her organs, I can't imagine such a high toxicity level would be an accident.
Have you identified the poison?
No, not yet, but I'll let you know as soon as I do.
All right, well, I'm heading over to the station, so I'll get your dad up to speed. Nice work, Z.
Thanks, Jeff.
At the station.
Now that it's officially a murder investigation, I think we should take a closer look at Glenn Eads.
Now, it wouldn't surprise me if whatever illegal activity Katie was into, he had a hand in as well.
Yeah, we'll pull up whatever we can on the both of them. In the meantime, Davis has got something to show you.
Davis?
As you know, we have Katie's phone, but We don't know the password.
And with the privacy settings and new encryptions, they're impossible to crack.
But notifications will still appear on the lock screen. Mm-hmm. And after she received some text this morning, we took some pictures.
Seriously, call me.
That's quick thinking, Davis. Who's Marty Klein?
Retired history professor. He's been on the island a couple of years. That's about all we got on him.
I ran a property record search and found an address in West Tisbury.
Well, let's go see what Mr. Klein so seriously needed Katie to call him back about.
The chief thumps the officer's shoulder. Davis smiles to himself. Then, Chief Medeiros and Jeff drive to a farm. They park near a greenhouse. Nearby, a man unloads bags from the bed of a pickup truck. The chief and Jeff climb out of the car.
Mr. Klein?
That's me.
I'm Chief Medeiros. This is Jeff Jackson. We'd like to ask you a few questions.
You came to the wrong place. I am the wisest man alive, for I know one thing, and that is that I know nothing.
Socrates.
I was a professor of Greek history and philosophy, hence the academic humor. So how can I help you?
How do you know Katie Leonard?
Katie? Well, she works for me part-time over in the greenhouse. Is she in some kind of trouble?
You could say that. When was the last time you saw her?
Yesterday.
Did something happen between you two? Because according to text messages you sent her this morning, you were very sorry and really wanted to talk to her.
Why are you reading my text messages?
We'll get to that in a minute. Can you please tell us what happened between the two of you?
Well, Katie inadvertently used weed killer in some soil. I just planted my heirloom tomatoes. Seeds cost me pretty penny. I got upset. More than I should have.
Over seeds.
They were non-GMO, open-pollinated Cherokee purples. But, you know, Katie and I are good friends. We bonded over both being vegan and our efforts to find self-sufficient ways of existing in this capitalistic, consumer-driven world.
Is that so?
Absolutely. The goal being harmony with the planet and everyone in it.
Uh-huh. Did she mention any disharmony in her personal life as of late?
No. But, you know, we don't talk much about our personal lives. If you want to know, why don't you just ask her?
Unfortunately, Katie passed away yesterday.
What? How?
That's what we're investigating.
Jeff checks his phone.
It's Z. She wants us over at the hospital.
Thanks for your time, Mr. Klein.
Mr. Klein nods.
If there's anything I can do, please ask.
Okie doke.
The chief watches Mr. Klein walk toward his greenhouse, then turns to Jeff.
So, what do you think of Mr. Green Thumb?
Despite all the shoveling, I got a strong whiff of manure. Let's go see what directions he can point us in.
Why don't you handle that? I gotta get back to the station.
At the hospital, Z washes her hands. She stares into the distance as she dries them. Jeff arrives.
What'd you find, Doc?
Well, I still haven't identified the poison that killed Katie. That's not an easy process. But I did find this bank receipt. It was crumpled up in the pocket of her jeans. How much money do you think a waitress would have in her bank account?
Living on the island ain't cheap. Grand or two.
Z hands the receipt to Jeff in an evidence bag.
Over $100,000?
That's about the same amount that appeared in my account. Seems like an unlikely coincidence.
And it's only a few days after the date on this statement that Katie was murdered.
As she shifts uncomfortably, Jeff knits his brows. At the bank, Lauren examines the receipt.
Yes, this is a balance statement from our bank. I found that in the pocket of a murder victim, Katie Leonard.
Did you know her?
Not personally, but didn't she wait tables at the beach house?
Yeah.
Now, this is from a corporate account, a company called Chesterfield Logistics, but Katie's name isn't connected to it in any way. Why would she have this bank statement?
Yeah, we're wondering the same thing ourselves.
Is there a contact listed for Chesterfield Logistics?
Lauren avoids Jeff's eyes.
This is a murder investigation, Miss Cabot. We're not asking for privileged information, just a name.
Z offers a smile.
The name on the account is Evelyn Lesko. I can give you her phone number.
Thank you.
Has my brother been any help?
Noah? Why do you ask? He owns the beach house. It's in a trust, so his name isn't on it, but he inherited it from our father.
Then we'll be sure to speak with him.
Actually, you just missed him. He was in depositing last night's bar receipts, but you might be able to catch him down the street. He's picking up baked goods for the restaurant.
Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Z turns to Lauren.
Oh, Lauren. I checked last night and my bank balances are back to normal. Did you find out what happened? Or whose money that was?
Lauren searches.
Now, this is strange. It looks like the money was transferred from your account to the Chesterfield Logistics account.
Are you telling me that Katie had a bank receipt from the same company who transferred Z over $100,000? Now, how is that possible? I mean, who exactly made that transfer?
It doesn't say who authorized it.
Well, isn't that a little strange?
Well, I can't explain it, but we've had ongoing issues with the system since we upgraded. I will get IT on it right away.
Yeah, well, when you find out what happened, we're going to need to know. ASAP.
As C and Jeff leave the bank, Lauren turns to Hazel at the next computer terminal. The women share a concerned look as the investigators leave. At the bakery, Frankie serves a customer.
Thanks so much. See you again. Z, so glad to see you.
Frankie, this is Jeff Jackson. Jeff, this is Frankie Walsh and Noah Cabot.
Nice to meet you guys.
Same. How do you know Z?
Thanks to this lady, I got the Pendray account.
No, that had nothing to do with me. It was your Queen of Mom.
You're too kind. Anything you like, it's on the house.
We actually had a couple questions for Noah.
Oh, yeah? Start with why he thinks the Red Sox have no shot at winning the World Series this year.
What?
It's blasphemy.
Spring training hasn't even started yet.
Exactly.
You know something we don't?
No, I'm with Noah. There's no depth in the bullpen. Lack of power. It's a total disaster.
Who can argue with Z?
If I need help with my fantasy baseball team, I know who to call. But how can I help? I hear from Claire you guys are looking into Katie Leonard's death. The whole thing is just terrible.
Yeah. When was the last time you saw her?
Maybe a few days ago. Restaurant pretty much runs itself, so I try to stay out of the way. Other than the occasional free meal, I'm hardly there.
And of course, to deliver the fresh baked goods.
Right.
Noah lifts boxes.
Which is basically just an excuse to talk baseball with this guy.
Katie's death is such a tragedy.
You know her?
Only in passing. The beach house was my first client. She was always so nice every time I stopped in.
Noah, did you know if she was having any personal problems?
No. I'm not that close with the staff. Best to keep things professional.
And so you never saw her have any trouble with her boyfriend, Glenn, your cook?
I can't say that I did.
Jeff nods.
Look, sorry, I gotta go, but please, keep me updated.
Sure thing.
Nice to meet you, Jeff.
Me too.
Later, Z.
Bye.
It's Frankie.
Now, please, you two grab seats, and let me bring you something special.
Later, on the sidewalk.
Now, I gotta say, that cannoli was top-notch.
Hey, and the coffee? Bob's got some competition.
You know, I better get going. I'm gonna be late to meet your dad.
All right, I'll get back to the lab.
All right. You know, I haven't forgotten you had something to tell me. I mean, yesterday on the beach.
Yeah, I haven't either. It can wait.
Z smiles and continues down the sidewalk. Jeff watches her go. He checks his phone.
Jackie, to what do I owe this honor?
Jeff, I'm glad I caught you. You got a minute?
Not really.
It's about a bank robbery in Boston. The suspect at large has the same M.O. as a bank robber named Gavin Parks, also known as 38 Special. If this is tied to your old case in Boston...
Jackie, I'm running a little late right now. I'm gonna need to call you back.
Okay.
All right.
Jeff hangs up, then climbs into his car. He makes a phone call.
You've reached Detective Andy Lau, Boston PD. Please leave a message.
Hey, Andy, it's Jeff Jackson. Call me when you get this.
Jeff hangs up with a frown. Then, Jeff parks in the driveway of a home. Chief Medeiros stands in the yard.
Got the keys to Katie's place right here.
Right.
Jeff catches the keys. He and the chief walk toward the door.
All we dug up so far is that Katie moved to the island at 18. Worked various hospitality jobs since then. Her former employers all speak really highly of her. No record, no trouble with the law.
Katie's door is already open. Jeff turns to the chief, then pushes the door open wider.
Hello?
A woman stands, hand on her heart.
Myrna?
Lincoln! What are you doing sneaking up on me like that?
No, I'm here on official business. What are you doing in here?
I've property managed these bungalows for years.
You're the landlord.
Landlord, resident, handy woman, I do it all.
Myrna DeLongpre, Jeff Jackson.
Roosevelt's son. I heard you were moving into your father's place. Nice to finally meet you.
Nice to meet you, too. So, Myrna, do you live on site?
A few bungalows down.
And did you get to know Katie well?
I did. Oh, she was such a light. My friend Lydia, she volunteers at the hospital, and her friend Hilda does admit at the morgue, and that's how I found out the news. I mean, what a shame.
Why are you in her apartment?
Violet.
And who's Violet?
Katie's cat. I realized that cat hasn't been fed, must be starving, terrified, so I just took the liberties. I mean, I still haven't found her, though. Oh, but she's got plenty of food for the week. Oh, seafood mango surprise. Delicious.
Myrna, can you tell me what all this is?
Katie made her own kombucha. Oh.
Should I know what that is?
A fermented tea. Helps promote a healthy bacteria in your gut.
My gut says no thanks.
Well, if I do say so, Duncan, you're looking quite fit without it.
Well, thank you.
I know that smell. Did she make this for anyone else? Did she sell it?
No, not that I know of.
So Katie drank all this kombucha herself?
Every day, like clockwork. She said it changed her life. Gave her more energy, clearer head. I mean, soon she was completely devoted to it. I mean, the works. From everything she ate, to the makeup she used, cruelty-free, all that.
Chief, I think we should step out of the bungalow.
Why? What's happened?
This could be where Katie was poisoned, which would make this apartment a crime scene.
Come on, Myrna.
Call Z.
Yeah.
An officer dusts Katie's bungalow for fingerprints. At a table, Z uses pipettes to take samples of kombucha. On a laptop, she runs diagnostic tests. Officers continue to investigate the bungalow. On the laptop, a test result comes up negative. Z shakes her head. She stands up and removes her goggles. Z walks outside. In the yard, she meets with Jeff and Chief Medeiros.
Hey, so, we know the poison that killed Katie was water hemlock. The samples from the jar we found in her backpack tested positive for conine, which is the active ingredient in the plant. So I compared that with Katie's blood samples, and we got a match. But everything in the apartment is testing negative.
So someone who knew Katie's daily routine spiked her kombucha. But it didn't necessarily happen here.
Yeah, exactly.
Kombucha is a murder weapon. That's a first.
You said water hemlock. How common is that plant?
It's native to the vineyard, and you can extract the poison from the flowers, the stems, or the roots.
Is it hard to make?
With a little research, probably pretty much anyone could do it.
We should talk to Myrna again. And the rest of Katie's neighbors. Find out if they saw anything or anyone unusual around the bungalows.
Jeff checks his phone.
Excuse me.
He walks away.
Andy.
Hey, Jeff. Look, I know why you've been calling, but we can't talk about this right now.
The guy you've been after could be the one who shot me.
Look, I know what this means to you, Jeff.
Then tell me what's going on.
All I can say is that a confidential informant gave me a lead on a suspect. I'm gonna check it out tonight.
Okay. How about I meet you?
No chance, Jeff. I'll let you know if anything pans out, but in the meantime, you just gotta trust me.
Right.
Jeff knits his brows, then hangs up. Z joins him.
Hey, is everything okay?
Yeah.
She studies his face.
No, actually.
Do you want to talk about it?
I gotta go. I gotta take a quick trip to Boston, but could you tell your father I should be back later tonight?
Yeah, of course.
All right, thanks.
Yeah.
Alone by the water, Z stares into the distance. She presses her lips together in concern. From above, boats along the coast. Then, the Boston skyline. Light snow drifts down in the city. Between two buildings, Detective Andy Lau sips coffee in a car. He sets the cup on the dashboard. His phone displays a call from Jeff. Andy grimaces, then turns off the phone. He takes another sip of coffee and stares into the distance. Andy startles as Jeff peers into the car. The window rolls down.
Really, Jeff? I'm on a stakeout.
Yeah, no kidding.
Get in the car.
Andy grimaces as he rolls up the window. Jeff hops into the passenger seat.
How did you find me?
I staked out Donovan's and tailed you. You've gotten a little too predictable, my friend.
What are you doing here?
Well, last time I got a tip on a bank robber, it didn't go so well. Thought you could use some backup.
But the real question is, why are you holding out on me?
Because it's too personal for you, Jeff. And you're not a cop anymore.
You sure there's nothing more to it?
I'm sure. I'm also sure you shouldn't be here right now.
Just like old times.
Andy sets his coffee on the dashboard. At night, he and Jeff continue to sit in the car. Fast food wrappers litter the dashboard.
Hey, is that him?
A man leaves a building.
Yeah, that's McDonough.
McDonough notices their car and turns around.
Well, he just made us.
You sure? Let's move.
Hey! Jeff and Andy run out of the car and chase McDonough. McDonough tips over a trash can. Jeff leaps over the garbage in pursuit. Andy follows. McDonough runs under an archway and sprints down a wet alleyway. At the end of the alley, a gate locks McDonough. He shoots a lock, then kicks the gate open. Then, McDonough enters the door.
Wow.
Jeff waves at Andy to follow him. Andy raises his gun as they creep into the building.
Stay behind me.
Andy points the gun as he and Jeff search for McDonough. The door shuts behind them. In the dim building, the two investigators take cover among storage units as they slowly make their way down a hall. Gun drawn, Andy stays ahead of Jeff. In the shadows, a figure moves past. Andy aims his gun as Jeff follows. Then, Andy peers through a doorway.
Jeff, wait here.
Andy knits his brows. He turns and notices Jeff is no longer behind him. Then, Andy creeps forward, gun still raised. In a narrow hall, Jeff searches the darkness for any sign of McDonough. He steps into a shadowy room and slowly walks forward. At the end of the hall, he notices the shadow of a man with a gun. Jeff flattens his back against the wall to avoid being seen. Jeff shuts his eyes. He remembers watching as his colleague is shot. He remembers his own gunshot wound. Jeff opens his eyes. He braces himself, then stealthily runs down the hall. Meanwhile, Andy creeps forward, gun pointed straight ahead. He turns a corner, then continues his search. McDonough's eyes peer into the darkness ahead. Slowly, Andy walks behind him and raises the gun. McDonough turns, gun in hand. Jeff rushes forward and punches McDonough. As they grapple, Andy continues to aim his weapon. Jeff throws McDonough to the floor and takes his gun.
Get on your knees. Hands behind your head. Cuff him, Andy. Hands. Come on. Get up. Keith McDonough, you're under arrest.
Jeff studies McDonough's face.
Do I know you?
I don't know. Do you?
McDonough grimaces as Andy leads him away. Jeff pauses, breathing heavily. Then, he follows Andy and McDonough.
I think it looks good.
Yeah. In the lab.
Hey! Almost ready?
Yes, thanks for calling. How's everything at the Pendray?
Good, good. Although we do seem to be missing a robe or two.
Ooh, maybe you need a good hotel detective.
Are you available?
No, my plate is full.
That's a shame.
Britt smiles.
And how are things outside of work?
Fine. They're fine. Dinner with Jeff was very nice.
Hmm.
Yeah. Most of the time when we're together, things are simple and easy. And sometimes they get a little complicated.
Oh, why? Is mixing work and play too much?
I hadn't thought about it like that. But no, I don't think that's a problem.
So there is a problem.
Just that Jeff has some baggage that's unresolved. But who doesn't, right?
Hey, you have every right to be guarded after what he who will not be named did to you.
Once bitten, twice shy, for sure.
Lady, the world is yours to conquer. And there's no reason to rush into anything before you're absolutely ready.
Thanks for saying that.
Yeah, it needed to be said. Also, congrats on officially becoming the island's medical examiner.
Thank you. That's coming with its own frustrations. We have leads in the case, but we still don't have a motive for the murder.
Well, if running a hotel has taught me anything, it's that no one's immune to temptation.
I'll keep that in mind.
Whoever they are, they better watch their step. Shazeem Medeiros is on the case.
That's right.
At night in Boston, city lights glow. In the station kitchen, Jeff reaches for coffee.
Takes a brave man to drink the local brew.
Oh, if it ain't been sitting in the pot since morning, what's the point?
I heard you took down McDonough. Nice work.
It's, Weber, right?
Yeah, Sergeant Paul Weber. You're Detective Jeff Jackson.
Retired.
Which begs the question, what were you doing at that stakeout?
It's personal. McDonough and I may have some history. Goes back to another case.
Yeah, I read the file.
You did? And why's that?
3 years ago, I crashed my patrol car chasing a petty thief. Shattered my femur. Now I ride a desk. I work on cold cases in my spare time. Yours is quite interesting.
And what do you find so interesting about it?
Hey, we both got sidelined before our time. It's no mystery what happened to me, so I've been able to make peace with it. I expect you want the same.
Jeff nods.
Well, maybe today's the day I get it.
Well, I hope you do. Mr. Jackson, if you need anything, you call me. We got a friend here.
Thanks, Sergeant. I'm gonna go sit in on Lyle's interrogation, so, if you don't mind.
Paul sips coffee as Jeff leaves the room. In an interrogation room, McDonough sits with a lawyer. Andy reviews paperwork in an observation room. Jeff enters.
You can watch from here.
Oh, come on, Andy. Little good cop, bad cop, just like the old days.
You know I can't let you in there. But I'll crack him.
Just give me the truth.
I got you.
Detective Lau.
That's me, and you are?
A problem.
Amanda Peterson, FBI.
Great. So how about you two get to know each other while I do my interrogation?
No, not so fast, Lau. Keith McDonough is mine now, and I will be conducting the interrogation once he's been moved into federal custody.
Whoa, Agent Peterson.
And I'll be lucky if a judge doesn't toss the arrest on the grounds that a civilian unlawfully apprehended him.
Can we start over? I got this guy on bank robbery charges.
I'm sorry, he's under FBI jurisdiction now.
How about we just give Detective Lau 10 minutes with him, then he's all yours.
McDonough has deeper ties to bigger fish, and that is my priority. Here's the transfer authorization. This case and this suspect now belong to me.
As she leaves the room, Jeff rubs his forehead.
How did she even know we had McDonough in custody?
I don't know. Well, one thing's for sure, she doesn't want us talking to him.
The lawyer and McDonough stand up from the table. In the daytime, boats in a harbor. Chief Medeiros visits Jeff's boat slip as Jeff works on the boat.
Dang it!
Engine trouble?
Jeff turns.
Among other things?
Patience plus a little TLC is the winning formula for workhorses like those.
Or I could just give up, sell this old girl, and buy myself a canoe.
Why would you do that?
Just to keep things simple, I guess.
You know, JW, I suspect that fixing up your father's boat is complicated.
Well, aren't you all full of wisdom?
We've been around a time or two.
Jeff looks down.
You know, all the things left unsaid after my dad passed, my life back in Boston. I want to put it all behind me, but somehow I just can't.
You know, I remember when Roosevelt bought this boat. He's lucky he didn't sink it, just sailing it into this marina. I had to ask why he got himself a project boat that was going to do nothing but eat up money and time.
What'd he say?
He thought maybe you'd work on it together, because he knew it wasn't just the boat that needed fixing. And now here you are, hoping to find the same connection.
Jeff's brows raise.
Listen, JW, some things can be repaired, but not everything that's broken can be mended, and that's okay. You can still find a way to move on.
Jeff nods.
Yeah, yeah, maybe you're right.
But I know you didn't come all the way over here just to tell me all that.
We got Katie Leonard's phone records.
You found something interesting?
Now, the last call she made pinged off a tower right in front of the station.
So she was there, but she didn't go in.
Yeah, unfortunately. She might still be alive if she had.
Who'd she call?
Oh, well, that's the interesting part. Noah Cabot.
Now, funny he didn't mention that when I spoke to him yesterday.
Well, maybe somebody should ask him about that, huh?
The chief turns to Jeff.
Are you coming?
Yeah.
Jeff follows. At the station, Officer Davis enters an interrogation room. Inside, Jeff and Chief Medeiros film an interview with Noah.
I didn't lie.
You didn't tell the truth.
Noah, what did you and Katie talk about?
Katie said she was in trouble. She wanted money, and I told her I couldn't help her like that.
Did she say what the money was for?
No, and I didn't ask.
Well, it's awfully convenient. You didn't tell us that yesterday when you were offering to help.
I didn't think it mattered. And I thought it looked suspicious.
Well, how do you think it looks not telling us about it?
Flustered, Noah lowers his gaze to the table.
Why are you so nervous, Noah?
I'm taking my sister to court over my dad's will.
And what's that have to do with Katie?
Nothing. I just figured I ought to distance myself from whatever trouble she was messed up in.
Jeff and Chief Medeiros look at each other, then study Noah. Later, Officer Davis leads Noah out of the interrogation room. Jeff and the chief stand in the hall.
It's hard to see him as a suspect when we don't have a motive.
What's really bothering me is we still haven't nailed down Katie's connection to the Chesterfield Logistics bank account.
You heard back from that contact Lauren gave us at the bank, Evelyn Lesko?
I have tried Miss Lesko several times. No response.
I'll run her name through the system.
Chief Medeiros searches on a laptop.
See what there is to see. Well, that's strange.
What is?
No picture available. Not even a DMV photo. And her name doesn't appear in any searches whatsoever, except those associated with Chesterfield Logistics.
How's that possible?
It's like until a few months ago, there was no Evelyn Lesko.
They stare at the screen in confusion. At Vineyard Island Bank.
Financial records are private. I can't start violating our clients' trust by handing over their data without due process.
Okay, but she may not even exist.
But you haven't proven she doesn't.
Well, in that case, Miss Cabot, if your client is breaking the law, you have a duty to help us.
Of course. Which law has Evelyn Lesko broken?
We'd be able to answer your question if we could look at the records.
And I believe that's called a catch-22, but the burden is on you, not me or the bank.
Lauren, you can't deny that the financial activity related to Chesterfield Logistics looks shady.
And the fact that Katie had that bank receipt means that she was somehow connected. Maybe even drawn in, unwittingly.
What would you have me do?
Well, to open the account, Miss Lesko would have to physically come into the bank, correct?
Correct. We need to see ID and articles of incorporation.
And when was the account opened?
3 months ago.
Okay, well, I'm pretty sure it's industry standard to keep video surveillance for at least 6 months. Let's take a look at the day she came into your bank.
Okay. Now that I can approve. Here we go.
Chesterfield Logistics was the only new corporate account open that day. That's our corporate desk. So that must be Miss Lesko.
Do you have another angle? I'd like to get a screen grab so we can positively identify her.
Lauren switches camera angles. Z peers at the screen.
That can't be.
Zoom in, please.
At the corporate desk, Katie wears a hat.
Katie and Evelyn are the same person? What does this mean?
I guess Katie was in deeper than we thought.
Jeff and Z look at each other, then study the footage. Later, at Bob's Coffee.
So Katie was a front for Chesterfield Logistics?
Exactly. Though we have no idea what the company does. Right now, all we have is her using a false identity to open a bank account. And we know who has a history of fake IDs.
Glenn Eames. Even if he and Katie were broken up, were they still working together? Could Chesterfield Logistics be some sort of scam?
We're looking to bring Glenn in for questioning. Chief had a patrol car swing by his place, but no sign of him. Went on an APB.
Okay, so here's what we know. It looks like Katie committed fraud.
Mm-hmm.
Glenn Eads is missing, and just a big question mark around Chesterfield Logistics. And eventually we have to tie in the water hemlock poison kombucha.
Yeah, it seems like such an unusual and kind of old-fashioned choice of poison.
Yeah, you're right. It's very old. The ancient Greek philosopher Socrates chose to drink hemlock when he was sentenced to death in the 5th century B.C.
And the professor of Greek history would certainly know that.
Z blinks.
Z, I think it's time you met Marty Klein.
At Marty's farm, Jeff parks near the greenhouse. Inside, a light flashes.
What was that?
I don't know.
Jeff and Z climb out of the car. In the greenhouse, a light flashes again. Jeff and C enter.
Dr. Klein?
Hey, you can't be in here.
Something you don't want us to see?
Are these Laotian slipper orchids?
This is private property. Leave now or I will call the cops.
Or maybe we'll call U.S. Fish and Wildlife, because from what I know, these orchids are illegal.
Mr. Klein smiles.
Okay, wait. How about we talk this out?
Oh, I think we should.
Okay, let's go up to the house.
After you.
Mr. Klein steps away from his camera. Z and Jeff follow him out of the greenhouse. Together, they walk toward the farmhouse.
Now, we knew that Katie was involved in some sort of criminal enterprise, but I can't say that orchid smuggling would have been my first guess.
I don't know what you're talking about. My orchids are merely a hobby.
If I'm not mistaken, those orchids in your greenhouse are illegally sourced and are worth thousands on the black market.
You know, this is ridiculous.
At a table.
And here's what else we know, Dr. Klein. Katie was a front for a dummy corporation. One that would be the perfect vehicle for you to launder the money you get from selling those flowers.
It's an absolute farce.
Well, what's not a farce is that Katie was helping you care for these orchids. And after your little falling out, I think her conscience got the better of her and she wanted to come clean. But you couldn't let her do that, could you?
You can't be serious.
As serious as poison kombucha. The autopsy found water hemlock in Katie's blood. Your idea of poetic justice, Professor?
I mean, you'd be able to recognize water hemlock, and you'd know it's deadly.
And being a fellow vegan, you would know better than anyone about Katie's homemade kombucha habit.
I did not poison Katie. I mean, why would I have sent her a text that morning if I killed her?
Oh, I don't know, to try to create an alibi for yourself after the fact.
I refuse to debate the plausibility of this because I did not murder her.
Refuse to debate all you want. You won't be required to testify at your trial for murder either.
Okay, wait. Yes, I trade in orchids. I can't afford to live on the vineyard on my pension. And yes, Katie ruined my seedlings, but all I did was reprimand her. It's true. She even apologized, said she was distracted. She was under a lot of stress lately.
What kind of stress?
She said she was having money troubles and they'd gotten out of hand. I offered to help, but she refused. She said she didn't want to take any more dirty money.
Mr. Klein blinks rapidly. Z knits her brows and looks up at Jeff. The investigators consider Mr. Klein's story. Later, at the police station.
You believe his story?
It's plausible. Over camera will mount just yet.
They study a chart.
So we have a retired history professor trafficking in illegal orchids. A low-life ex-cook with a shady reputation. An untraceable corporate bank account. A victim with an alias. And poison kombucha.
I wish there was a way to know what Katie really wanted to say when she got in touch with you.
Chief?
Davis enters.
Glenn Yead's car was spotted in a public lot half a mile from his place on the water.
Guess he doesn't want us to know he's home.
Let's go pick him up.
Z and Jeff follow Chief Medeiros. They park in Glenn's driveway. Then, they climb out of the police car.
We'll head around back.
They walk up the building's back stairs.
Sounds like he's got company.
Door's open.
The chief holds his gun and walks toward the door. Jeff turns to Z.
Stay here.
The chief opens the door.
This is the police!
As the chief steps into a room to the right of the door, Jeff continues down a hallway. Z remains outside. Then, the chief and Jeff search for Glenn together. They pause outside a partially open door.
Glenn Eads, stand up slowly. Hands in the air.
Glenn doesn't move.
We're not playing games, Glenn.
Slowly, Jeff and the chief enter the room. In a chair, Glenn's lifeless eyes stare straight ahead. Blood stains his t-shirt around a bullet wound. Chief Medeiros lowers his weapon. He and Jeff share worried glances as they stand near their grim discovery. Officers collect evidence from Glenn's house. In the TV room, Chief Medeiros watches as the investigation continues. Z examines Glenn's wound.
Well, it's no mystery to the cause of death. It's a single gunshot wound to the chest.
How long has he been dead?
Based on rigor and lividity, I'd say roughly 12 hours.
Glenn's been MIA since night before last.
So who was he hiding from? Us? Or Katie's killer?
Jeff knits his brows, then walks away. Z follows him. On a rug, Jeff finds the word now clipped from a magazine. He crouches to pick it up.
Somebody was devoted to his trade.
I don't think so.
In a magazine, many words are missing.
What are you doing?
Definitely wasn't clipping recipes.
Hey, Chief. We're gonna need copies of all these magazines.
At the station, Jeff and Z flip through magazines. They compare Glenn's copies to copies with intact pages, then clip the words Glenn removed. They carefully study each page to identify which words are missing. On a table, Z and Jeff begin to arrange the words into a sentence.
Okay, pay? Pay me?
Here, 100K.
Mm-hmm. Pay me 100. Mm-hmm. Pay me 100K or...
Yeah, I've got an I.
Or I go to the cops.
Blackmail. On the table, the completed sentence.
I guess whoever Glenn was blackmailing didn't like his options.
Over the harbor, the sun sets. At a takeout restaurant, a server brings meals to Jeff and C.
Thank you.
They sit outdoors.
So who was Glenn blackmailing?
And if the 100K was paid to Glenn and Katie through Chesterfield Logistics, why'd they both end up dead?
Well, you said that Katie wanted to come clean when she met you, so maybe she knew things were going south.
Maybe. But I didn't listen. It's not really something I do, is it?
Z smiles.
Look, I have feelings for you.
What?
Jeff knits his brows, then checks his phone. It displays a call from Andy Lau.
Go ahead.
You sure?
Yeah, of course.
Jeff steps away.
Andy.
Hey, Jeff. Look, I called in some favors, and I got permission to question McDonough tomorrow afternoon.
That's great. I'll fly over in the morning.
Figured there was no keeping you away. Meet me at the federal holding facility at noon.
I'll be there. Thanks, Andy.
Jeff hangs up, then comes back to the table.
Sorry about that.
Yeah.
Where were we?
Is everything all right?
Yeah. Andy's just questioning McDonough tomorrow.
And you want to be there?
I have to be.
Yeah.
I need the truth. You know, I can't keep carrying this around with me.
Z nods.
Enough about me. You were saying?
Jeff, we both have a lot on our minds. Maybe we can talk when you get back. Just focus on Boston. Go do what you need to do.
She knits her brows.
Thanks.
Yeah.
She smiles. At home, Jeff circles notes on a paper. He puts down his pen. Jeff rubs his chin, deep in thought. On a laptop, he searches the Suffolk County Criminal Court database for Keith McDonough. There are no results. Jeff picks up his phone. He dials, then raises it to his ear. Paul Weber carries a mug into his office.
This is Weber.
Sergeant Weber, it's Jeff Jackson.
Jackson? Hey, man, sorry to hear about your case. I hear the feds stepped in.
They did? Well, we're gonna get our shot at him tomorrow afternoon. Listen, I was looking for some information I can't seem to get access to as a private citizen.
Well, what do you need?
Well, I got McDonough's rap sheet in front of me. You know, it's full of felony B&Es and a few misdemeanors I'm sure were knocked down.
But I'm looking for more on his known associates, specifically at Gavin Parks.
Can you get into his arrest records?
Well, let's take a look.
Weber searches.
Yeah, looks like McDonough was picked up a few times as a prime. In a series of jewelry store smash and grabs.
But he was cut loose.
And brought in alone.
Can you tell me who the arresting officers were?
Yep, just a sec.
Weber searches again.
Wow. All arrests were made by the same officer. Your buddy.
You mean Andy?
Yeah, Andy Lau. You know, this is only 4 years ago.
He didn't mention that they had a history?
No, he didn't.
Huh. Jeff knits his brows.
All right. Thanks, Sergeant.
Jeff hangs up. With a pained expression, he stares out the window into the night. He shifts uncomfortably. At the FBI building in Boston, Jeff walks up a flight of stairs with Andy.
Not sure how long I'll have, but hopefully I get you what you need.
Okay, well, there's something I need to understand first. How come you didn't tell me you'd arrested McDonough before? And on more than one occasion.
Are you looking into my arrest records?
No, I was looking into his. But the point is, you ain't playing straight with me. Why didn't you mention it?
Jeff glares.
Because I'm watching out for you.
Okay, well, sometimes it doesn't seem like it.
I'm trying to keep you at arm's length to protect you.
Protect me from what?
Something about your shooting doesn't feel right. Someone with juice is pulling strings, hiding the truth. Someone with connections. And I don't want you in the crosshairs again.
Thanks, but I'll take my chances. And if you were me, you'd do the same thing.
Andy blinks rapidly, then follows Jeff.
I'm sorry. From now on, all cards on the table.
Good.
They walk to a desk. Andy holds up his badge.
I'm here to question Keith McDonough.
Hang on. A few minutes ago, there was an incident. Keith McDonough's dead.
You sure?
What happened?
He was found unresponsive in his cell. That's all we know right now.
Jeff strokes his beard.
This can't be a coincidence.
No. Then whoever's behind it has more reach and power than we ever imagined.
Jackson, Lau. What happened?
This is a federal facility. Why don't you tell us?
I don't like what you're implying, Jackson.
I'm not implying anything. I'm saying, Special Agent Peterson, that this happened on your watch.
And I'll get to the bottom of it. Go back to your island, Jackson. Seems wherever you go, trouble follows.
Special Agent Peterson turns and walks away. Jeff knits his brows. He looks toward the desk, then down the hall toward Peterson. At the Vineyard Police Station.
Hey, how was Boston?
Let's just say it's good to be back. So what you got?
Warrants came through. Chesterfield Logistics bank records showed payments from only one source, the beach house. So we met with Claire and we got the financial records for the beach house.
And guess what? Claire insisted she has no knowledge of any transaction with Chesterfield Logistics.
And according to these ledgers, Claire's not lying. There is not a single payment to Chesterfield Logistics in here.
Unless someone's cooking the books. Somehow finding a way to hide those transactions.
When we went to see Claire, she said that Katie left the restaurant abruptly that night.
If Katie was thinking about coming clean, maybe she'd gotten proof.
Well, let's say she did. Where is it?
I mean, I doubt she would come to see Jeff empty-handed.
Well, we didn't find anything like that in Katie's backpack. But maybe we missed something.
Jeff takes a box from a shelf. He sorts through Katie's belongings with Z and Chief Madeira's. Z looks into an evidence bag.
We keep hearing that Katie only uses cruelty-free, earth-friendly products, right?
Some.
So this is not.
Z pulls a lipstick tube from the bag. Carefully, she twists off the bottom of the tube. Then, she peers inside. From the tube, Z pulls a USB thumb drive.
A hidden thumb drive.
Z, you're a genius.
As Jeff takes the drive, Chief Madeira grins at his daughter. Jeff plugs the drive into a computer.
This second set of books, payments to Chesterfield Logistics, are all here.
We thought Chesterfield Logistics was laundering the Orchid money, but instead, it looks like it's receiving cash that's being laundered through the beach house.
It just begs the question still, whose money is that?
Exactly, because they're willing to kill to keep it.
Well, given what we know about the restaurant and the Cabot family feud over Vineyard Island Bank...
We need to have another chat with Noah Cabot.
Oh, yeah. Come on.
Z and the chief follow Jeff. Then, Jeff drives his car in the rain. He parks outside the restaurant and turns the engine off. In the passenger seat, Z holds her phone to her ear.
Okay, I'll tell him. So... My dad says that Noah's not at his house, but there were signs of a hasty exit, and he's still not answering his phone.
Well, if Noah's making a run for it, he's going to want to stop here. I mean, Katie copied those files from somewhere. My guess is they're still on the office computer. Come on. Stay close.
They climb out of the car. Inside the restaurant, they walk down a flight of stairs. Z stays behind Jeff as they search for Noah. In the office, rumpled papers and folders littered the floor. Jeff scowls, then turns to Z. In a kitchen, a person places an object into a smoky microwave. Noah waits in front of the microwave. He doesn't notice Jeff and Z behind him. The microwave sparks.
What you cooking, Noah?
Noah grips a knife.
Take it easy, Noah. There's no reason for anyone else to get hurt.
I had nothing to do with Katie's death.
Then come down to the station and tell the chief the whole story.
Right, like it's that easy.
Noah, running is only gonna make it worse.
Running is the only choice I have.
I know, it seems like that right now, but...
You don't understand. I came here the night before Katie died to warn her to not mess with those people. And the next day when we spoke, I told her to leave town. But she decided to come clean with you. And she didn't make it.
Give us names, Noah.
Noah points the knife.
I paid off Glenn when he blackmailed me. But I didn't kill him. I warned Katie. And now they're both dead. I don't want to be next.
Okay, well, let us help you.
You can't. It's too late. Noah!
Noah runs. As he bursts through a door, Jeff shoves him against the wall. They grapple at the top of a staircase.
Noah! No!
Then, Noah tumbles down the stairs. Z runs downstairs, then checks Noah's pulse.
We need to get him to the ER.
Later, on the phone.
About 15 minutes, we're just leaving the beach house. I called Dr. Lowe, and she's fine.
J.W., you believe what he told you about not killing Katie and Glenn?
If he really did pay off Glenn and warn Katie. But he seems to be more afraid of whoever he's in business with than going to jail.
We need to convince him we can keep him safe. Get him to talk.
Okay, so I called a neurosurgeon in to meet Noah in the ER. But with an injury like this, he's unlikely to wake up anytime soon.
And our killer could be long gone by then.
Z and Jeff turn to Chief Medeiros, worried. From above, the coast. In the morning, at Bob's Coffee.
One London pub, and the usual.
Thank you. Nice. Thanks for this.
My pleasure.
You want to sit here?
Z, yeah. Jeff.
Hey.
Hey, I heard about everything at the beach house last night. How's Noah Cabot doing?
He's stable, but he's still unconscious.
Oh, no.
And we still don't know who his accomplice is. So unless Noah wakes up, we're out of leads.
I have known Noah for such a long time, and I have to admit, I'm shocked that he's involved in something like this.
Well, I used to date one of his friends, and not to speak out of school, but the rumor was that Noah once had a serious gambling problem.
How serious?
He didn't just owe money. There was some kind of trouble with the law. His dad had to step in to make it go away.
But we ran Noah's name in the Vineyard PD database, and his record came up clean.
Unless it happened in another jurisdiction.
I saw Noah wearing a Belcourt College sweatshirt at the bank.
That's in Providence.
So he went to college in Rhode Island.
We should get back to the station and do some more digging. Thanks, Britt.
Talk soon.
Z and Jeff hurry away.
Thanks.
Britt's brows raise.
You had a good help.
In Chief Medeiros' office, Z and Jeff meet with the chief.
So you think Noah was using the beach house to launder profits from gambling?
I do. But not how I thought.
A database search.
Says Noah was arrested in Providence for bookmaking.
Then he wasn't making bets, he was taking them.
So instead of being the gambler, he was the casino?
Exactly. And I'm sure an elite private school like Belcourt has no shortage of trust fund kids like Noah with money to burn. Now, it says here they were trying to tie Noah to a big-time bookie named Donnie Callahan.
Well, if Noah's back to being a bookie, that would explain all the money coming in and why he'd have to launder it through the restaurant.
But it still leaves us with the question, whose money's backing him now?
Later, the chief and Jeff accompany Lauren into an interrogation room.
Right down the end there, please.
Why am I here? I should be at the hospital with my brother.
We won't keep you any longer than we have to. Okay, Lauren?
Here's the problem. Noah was using the beach house to launder illicit gambling profits, which he then funneled into Chesterfield Logistics. Don't act so surprised. You knew about it.
If I was helping him launder money, I could lose the bank. There is no way I would be part of that.
We talked to your father's probate lawyer. We know that Noah's exclusion from any interest in the bank is based on a morals clause. If he keeps his nose clean, he gets half. If he gets caught gambling again, he gets nothing.
You put $100,000 into Z's account, threw up a flare to get Z's attention, get us asking questions. But your brother was in deeper than you thought.
Lauren looks down.
Since Dad died, I felt it was on me to look out for him. He has a terrible addiction, and I thought he could beat it. All I was trying to do was help him.
Okay, then help us. Whose money is Noah laundering?
I don't know. All I know is that about 4 months ago, before all this started, he spent a few weekends in Providence.
Jeff knits his brows as he studies Lauren. Later, Jeff and the chief enter the hall.
Well, that's not much to go on. But you gotta think it's gonna be someone from Noah's past.
I think you'd be right.
How'd it go?
Never a dull moment. Just playing on a hunch here, but I think we need to find out what happened to Donnie Callahan.
Jeff makes a call.
Weber.
Sergeant Weber, Jeff Jackson again. Got another favor to ask.
Yeah, shoot.
Have you heard of a Donnie Callahan out of Providence? A bookie?
Callahan? Let me see what I can find out.
At the bakery, a blowtorch caramelizes treats on a tray. As Z walks into the bakery, Frankie looks up from his work.
Z, always a pleasure to see your smiling face.
Oh, likewise.
Where's your boat?
He's at the hospital.
Oh, any news about Noah? I hear he's hurt bad.
Yeah, he's getting a lot better. The chief and Jeff are going to talk to him right away, actually.
Good. Good. What can I get you?
These look good.
These are my favorite.
Noah calls Frankie.
Do you need to get that?
No.
Frankie silences the call.
It can wait. Creme brulee.
It looks important.
You might be right.
Frankie takes his phone aside.
Listen close, Noah. You better keep your mouth shut. If I go down, you go down with me. Do you hear me?
Harsh words. For such an old friend.
Who is this?
Someone who knows all about starting over.
Jeff walks in.
Hey, Frankie. Or should I say Donnie? Donnie Callahan.
What kind of prank is this, Jeff? It's not funny.
You got that right. Two murders and no laughing matter. But that's nothing for a man of your reputation.
You think you have to be confused with someone else?
Oh, do I?
Jeff unfolds a mugshot.
The hair's changed, the shape, the beard. And I suspect all the baking's to account for the extra pounds. But that's still you. Courtesy of a friend at the Boston PD.
You guys are nuts.
No, we figure that when Rhode Island legalized sports betting, your business as a bookmaker took a fatal hit.
You needed an exit strategy. A way to legitimize all the gambling money you've made over the years.
So you just reinvented yourself as Frankie Walsh, the amiable baker.
Now, your old pal Noah had a successful restaurant. The perfect place through which to launder the millions in cash you had stashed in your retirement fund. All without alerting the IRS.
In baking boxes, money. On a cooktop, a boiling pot.
And it was working. Until Katie's boyfriend stuck his nose where it didn't belong.
Donnie pours poison.
At which point Katie wanted out. But you couldn't risk her talking, could you?
He closes the lid of Katie's kombucha jar.
And when Glenn finally turned up, you took him out for good measure.
Sure we can't work something out?
I don't think so.
Such a shame. Because I kind of like you, and you, Z, you're such a sweetheart. But so it goes.
Donnie tosses flour in the air above their heads, then sets it on fire with the torch. He runs through the kitchen.
You okay?
I'm good.
Come on.
Jeff and Z follow Donnie. Behind the bakery, Donnie speeds away in a red car.
Hey!
Jeff and Z run after him, then stop. A light snow falls. Z makes a phone call. Police cars race toward the marina. Chief Medeiros parks his car. Jeff climbs out of the passenger seat and touches the hood of Donnie's abandoned car.
Still warm. I'm guessing he has access to a boat. Plan to make a run for the mainland.
Z, why don't you stay with the patrol cars? Call us on the radio if you see anything. Come on, be careful. You might be armed.
Chief Medeiros raises his gun. He leads two officers and Jeff toward the marina. As the police head toward the boat slips with guns drawn, a pile of objects tumbles from one of the boats. As the police continue toward the disturbance, Jeff stops. He turns to the left, then jogs onto a wooden dock. At the end of the dock, a boat named Echo Rock idles. The boat is not tied to the dock. Jeff jogs back in the direction he came from. Near a different boat, Chief Medeiros approaches two men. The men turn to each other in confusion.
Where's Jeff?
Meanwhile, Jeff peers through a partially open door. He reaches out and pushes the door open. Jeff steps into a boathouse. Inside, life vests hang on a wall. Jeff peers into the dim space. Racks hold many kayaks. The front of the boathouse opens toward the water. Slowly, Jeff walks between two rows of kayaks. He searches from side to side as he goes. At the water's edge, Jeff peers down at the Echo Rock. On the dock, he spots a duffel bag. Jeff reaches for the bag. Inside, he finds stacks of $100 bills. Jeff stands up and looks out toward the water. He turns back toward the boathouse. Donnie approaches Jeff from behind. He slashes at Jeff with a hook, but misses. The men grapple and shove each other against kayaks. Then, Donnie throws Jeff into a barrel of paddles. Donnie yanks Jeff off the ground, then shoves him into a wooden beam and punches Jeff in the back. As Jeff tries to scramble away, Donnie lifts him up by the neck.
Should've stayed in retirement, Jeff.
Jeff jams his fingers into Donnie's eye, then punches Donnie repeatedly.
JW!
An officer grabs Donnie.
Get up. On your knees.
You okay?
Just great. You mind if I do the honors?
Jeff cuffs Donnie.
Get up.
He hauls Donnie to his feet, then walks him out of the boathouse. In a room lit with fairy lights that overlooks the water, Jeff and Z reach for each other's hands. They walk to a table.
So this is your charming picnic spot overlooking the ocean.
Yeah, with a twist.
I love it.
Jeff sets down a basket, then clutches his back.
Ooh. You okay?
What do you got in that thing, a 5-course meal?
Well, I know how much you like to eat.
That's true.
They sit.
So listen, and this got built up more than it needed to, but what I was going to say on the beach...
Was that you want to take things slow between us?
She smiles.
How did you guess?
His brows quirk upward as he smiles.
Yeah, I mean, I know you have a lot on your plate. Some things are unresolved. And when it comes to relationships, I'm still a little gun-shy.
Yeah. So am I.
She looks into his eyes.
I just don't want to get hurt again.
I get that.
He takes her hand in his.
But I want you to know that there's nothing more important to me than keeping you safe. I'm not going to let anyone I care about get hurt again.
That's good to know.
She smiles.
And I know I may seem a little emotionally unavailable sometimes.
But I do know that if I want to build the life that I want here on the island,
I'm going to need to make peace with my past.
Yeah, I hope you do.
He offers her a weary smile.
And in the meantime, you have work to do. Because you owe me a successful voyage on the Remedy.
That I do.
They grin, then raise their wine glasses.
So here's to us. Getting back out on the water.
They toast with a smile, then sip wine as the sun sets.